The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to the Insertion Film Podcast Extra Film segment for September 4th, 2014, and I'm J.D. Duran.
And I'm Brendan Cassidy.
No guest this week, Brendan, although we were supposed to have Dan from Talking in Circles on the show, but he had to kind of cancel last minute.
That's a shame.
But I do want to throw out a plug for Dan at Talking in Circles because we didn't get a chance to play his promo spot on our main show. And so I do want to talk about his show just real quick. You definitely want to go check it out. It's a great show. They talk everything, pop culture, music, video games, movies, all kinds of fun stuff, sports even as well. So they cover the whole gamut of pop culture. It's a really fun show. Dan's been on our show several different times, these extra film segments and our main show as well. So if you listen to our show, you're probably a little familiar with him anyway. We're also interacting with him on Twitter all the time. So definitely go check it out. He's part of the GeekCast Radio Network, so you can either just go to geekcastradio.com and you can find the stuff there. Or if you just do a simple Google search for Talking in Circles podcast, you'll find it there. It's in iTunes, so you can definitely go and check that out. Fantastic show. Definitely go and search them. I promise you it'll be worth your time. But for this week's show, Brendan, we're going to be reviewing The Congress, starring Robin Wright, which is going to be interesting, to say the least.
Or it's going to be a very quiet discussion.
So I'm kind of curious to see how that is going to go. This is one of those where, like, I like doing podcasts where it's just you and I.
Yeah.
It's fun banter when it's just two people. This is one where three people, I think, would be really useful, actually. So.
Yeah, I think hopefully this is not a boring one this time around.
I think it's going to be fun, though. It should be a really fun discussion. And that is all we're doing on this extra film. So it's going to... I'm still processing it. I just finished watching this, like, maybe 30 minutes ago.
Same here.
Still sitting on it.
So this is more than fresh right now.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's a good or bad thing, but
we'll
give it a shot.
Yeah. Before we get into it, though, man, how's your week going so far?
It's going, man. Not too bad. Just kind of keeping up with the work thing. I'm going to be going to California on the next couple weekends, though.
Oh, man.
Just for work.
Just for work.
It'll be...
I've been there.
Yeah. Believe it or not, I've never been to California.
Really?
Yet. Yeah.
What part are you going to?
San Francisco area.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. But it's only going to be for work, so I'm not going to be really doing much of the sightseeing stuff. It's only going to be for a few days, too. And the second I get back, it's my birthday.
Oh, have fun.
So I might take off that Monday and just get crunk by myself. I don't know, but we'll see.
No, that's fun. Yeah. I used to work in Louisville, and a couple times a year we'd go out to California for some conferences and stuff, and it was fun. We were like in the Huntington Beach area.
Huntington Beach.
Our hotel was like right on the water, too, so it was lots of fun stuff going on.
I'm envious, man. That's beautiful. How about you? How's it going?
My week has been really interesting. I feel like I have visited every emotion to the extreme this week. It's been crazy. Work has been frustrating on a level I can't even begin to describe. But at the same time, I've had some really fun moments this week, some really sad moments this week, especially with some stuff going around here with some of our friends here in Lexington recently. There's been some really sad news that we've been having to deal with, and so I'm still processing all of that, and that's been kind of weird. It's been this really weird mixture of emotions. It's been quite the week.
And just that event alone that I know you're talking about, because it affects me as well. There's a lot going on with just that right there.
Yeah,
I mean, we're not going to go into
crazy
specifics here, but we can talk about it with our friends and everything. But
it's been pretty crazy. Yeah, it's really heartbreaking, and it's definitely put a damper on some things for sure. But but you know, despite that, and despite some work stuff, at the same time, you know, I've had a lot of fun things happen this week. I'm excited the NFL kicks off tonight.
That's right.
So I got to get my fantasy leagues in order. So I'm ready for the weekend. Michigan's playing Notre Dame, and one of my best friends in the whole world, he's a big Spartans fan, and it's also his birthday this weekend, so we're going to be celebrating that. It's Nate Parsons, for those that are familiar with our show.
He's Nate,
longtime co-host of the In Session Film podcast. And his Spartans play Oregon, so that's going to be a big game as well.
So
it should be fun, but anyway, enough about all of that. We got the Congress to talk about, Brendan.
I don't know what to say about that, but okay.
All right, let's get into it.
And here we go.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast Extra Film segment. Brendan, what will you do with this thing that you call JD?
We'll do all the things that you wouldn't do, which is pretty much everything.
That isn't Michelle.
That is Michelle.
No, I mean, obviously it's Michelle, but you're telling me she wasn't there when they did this?
If you really want to know, she was in Paris when they were making that crap on their computers.
I'm shocked. I mean, it's perfect.
Perfect? No, but
it's not bad at all for the beginning of the revolution.
Notice anything?
Look at those morons. They've been trying to solve that bug for 3 years.
I don't find that funny at all.
Well, okay, just wait until you see that wink in the sex scenes. It'll crack you up.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, Mom. You gotta admit, it's good stuff. Don't be so harsh. Technophobia never got human nature anywhere.
So you're with them now.
You switch sides?
Oh, come on, Robert, drop the hypocrisy. It's not like anything has changed. They came, they took, they created a crappy rom-com, just like they've been doing since the 40s.
All right, The Congress is directed by Ari Folman and stars Robin Wright, Harvey Keitel, John Hamm, and a bunch of other people that we will get into. I guess the first thing, Brendan, that I'll say is this, to me, I think is one of the most ambitious films I've seen this year and maybe in quite some time. It's really intriguing and explores a lot of really interesting ideas. I'll toss it to you first. What did you think about The Congress?
I don't want to go first.
I can go first if you want.
Well, I will. You know a movie is ambitious like that when if someone asks you, what did you think of it? And the first two words you say are, I think, ...
Yeah.
And sure, that's my case here. I think I liked it. And then another point of the movie is like, I think I hate it. And then I would switch back and forth again. Sure. For those who don't really know what this movie is about, neither do I.
We got to do our best to try to set it up.
I guess it takes place in an alternate universe where Robin Wright plays herself, which... I still am trying to wrap my head around, and I'll get into that a little bit later. And feel free to chime in about the story of this thing. But
well, basically, you're right. Robin Wright plays herself. She's an actress who has done some great work before. In fact, they do reference real jobs that she's done. Princess Bride,
Forrest Gump,
other things like that. So it is kind of in this universe, sort of, but also futuristic at the same
time.
Basically, she gets an offer from a fake Hollywood studio, and in this offer, they basically say, we want to recreate Robin Wright through computer animation, essentially. And by doing that, She wouldn't act. It wouldn't be her on screen.
It's basically like a microchip of her, yes. So to speak. It's a program.
And which they could use to create any character they want for any movie that they want. And it's their idea of trying to keep her around so as she ages on screen, that never changes.
Right.
They can make her young. They can keep her young and good looking for as long as they want. And so through that, though, she would have to give up acting in real life, but she would also get a bunch of money.
So, essentially, yeah. And she can do whatever she wants. But yeah, she's told she is not allowed to act ever again, yeah. or any form of like entertainment like that, yeah. That puts herself
and
out
she has
there.
No right to choose any projects. Like once she hands over the papers that she signed for this, like the studios have the right to use that character for whatever they want. So mm-hmm. it is kind of this weird thing of, well, my face and my image is going to be portrayed in a certain way that I have no control over.
Exactly.
And which she struggles with. She struggles with that idea for a little bit.
Yeah. And that's where the movie was working for me in one reason, because I'm thinking, okay, so this is a Hollywood satire, essentially. This is a satire on Hollywood. And I'm thinking, okay, that's kind of neat. And then we get to the second half of the film. It's like, okay, when did I change the channel? It's like, when did I change the channel on here? And it's not just because we go into what they start calling the animated zone, and that's what it's actually called in this movie, but it becomes about so many other things entirely that it's almost like the first half here was really just like the pending doom of what's going to be happening next. And then it just goes into so many different directions. I lost count. And but in the most fascinating and then most frustrating ways, too. For audience listening now, the movie is basically half animated.
I would almost argue it's mostly animated.
Actually, that's a good point. That starts in the 40-minute range, and it goes for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, the first act is live action, and then from there, there's like one little glimpse where they go back to live action in the third act, but it's very short.
It's very, very short. It's a brief instant. But we're still fresh off this movie. I'm still trying to have a bit of a comprehension of what the heck this thing was about. But it almost kind of goes into bit of like Matrix territory, where when you start finding out like what the purpose of this animated zone is, in some ways it's kind of neat because it's almost meant to make these people unrecognizable. There are times when the character played by Danny Houston shows up in animated form later on, and time he sees her, are you Robin Wright? And obviously we know it's her because we've been watching this progress in this movie. Sure. But the point is that you're not supposed to know it's her until they tell you. There's an interesting scene that she has with what looks like a washed up actor outside of Danny Houston's office, and it's pretty obvious that it's supposed to be Tom Cruise.
Sure.
Because it looks like he's in his Top Gun outfit, and that scene was kind of funny. So then I was taken back to the first half of the film. It's like, okay, you know, this is Hollywood satire, but I don't really think it is. I think
it's much deeper than that. Yeah. I mean, we were talking about this kind of being this really ambitious project, which it is. I also feel like it's really creative. And for me, I think this lingers on the idea that deep down we all want eternal youth, I think, is a big part of this film. Now, there's more that goes into it than just that, but I think when we're talking about youth and remembering our prime and trying to stay there and trying to cling on to that as much as possible, I think there is a lot there surrounding that, especially when you're talking about actresses, because Hollywood is so known for putting so much pressure on women in Hollywood to stay young and to stay beautiful and sexy for all these different roles. And if you get outside of that zone, you become this washed up actress that nobody wants to see on screen.
Yeah, it's a game.
So
it really is.
It is.
Yeah.
And so you have big Hollywood coming in. Hey, let's steal you while you're young. That way you can grow old, but we'll keep your young self on screen. And I think there's some really interesting ideas that they do explore with that. And I think it's kind of funny because toward the third act of the film, you see the Robin Wright character. Now, she's in this animated world, as we've been talking about, and she's also a little bit older at this point. And you can even see that in the animation of her character.
I think it's a 20-year gap after,
Yeah, there is. And there's a moment where she's like flying a kite, which I think is really interesting, because when you think about flying a kite, you think of that as this youthful event, this youthful activity that people do. And in the background, there's a version of the song Forever Young playing in the background at the same time, which I found really interesting.
That was pretty clever. That was pretty clever.
Really clever. And then it turns from that to this youthful sex also that I think kind of plays into that idea a little bit as well. And especially with the dreamlike animation that's kind of happening around that activity, it kind of puts you into that state of mind of what it's like to be a young adult and what it is like to be in your prime. And so that exploration of the film, to me, I found really fascinating.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point about, you know, like the desire to stay young when compared to the world of Hollywood, which is really the game of it all. I mean, if we want to go into details, we see all these women actresses who used to once be beautiful, when they get older and kind of out of their prime. You see this whole plastic surgery thing going on. It's a real thing, and it's kind of disturbing sometimes.
Sure.
And the movie doesn't address that kind of topic specifically, but it does go into that kind of idea. And in many ways, when the film kind of gets into what I called like the Matrix territory, where this animated zone is arguably like a safe zone for what the real world has become, it almost could be looked as like the dehumanization of Hollywood specifically, kind of in that same regard as
it
what
really
you're talking
is,
about.
Yeah.
So because there's a lot of quick cuts in this movie that I thought were actually pretty fascinating. There's when we first enter the animated zone, we kind of get some of the exposition that not only is Robin Wright now kind of put herself out there as like a computer program that is now in movies that she has no control over, as we talked about.
Sure.
But then they're going to have the ability to kind of like drink her as like a milkshake or something like that.
Crazy.
And in some form of a drug, I guess. And you actually see some of these people around there sniffing what looks like this drug. And as they sniff it, they briefly turn to what it looks like another celebrity. I think I saw Marilyn Monroe. I think I saw Clint Eastwood. So it is, but it looked like them in their prime too. So it is that desire for a lot of just people in general to stay in touch with what they thought was their most innocent and pure and like beautiful past. But it's essentially about how Hollywood's been trying to do that too, from an actor's standpoint.
Yeah.
But they know that the dehumanization and the downfall of Hollywood is upon us, as in the world in general. And that's kind of where I saw that connection for.
Yeah. Well, I think another big thing that I took away from this movie, and you kind of hit on it, and perhaps the way that I took it was a little bit different than what you said.
Sure.
But it's the idea about human obsession when it comes to not only beauty, as we talked about with youth, but also fantasy, especially when you introduce drugs and chemicals and our dependence on technology and different things like that. Because, like you said, there is this 20-year jump to the future where people are taking this chemical drug, which gives them these hallucinations that brings us the animated world of this film.
Yeah.
And within this animated world, they can pretty much create whoever they want. They can be whoever they want. So if you want to be Tom Cruise, you can be Tom Cruise and you can go have a drink at the bar next to Jesus and Moses if you wanted to. So,
sure.
I mean, it gives us a lot of different creativity as far as people in this world, there's so much going on in this world too.
It's so bizarre.
And it's really hard to stay on top of that at times. I do feel like that's one of the weaker parts of the movie, is from a story standpoint. Once you get to the animated world, it really loses its coherency and becomes disjointed a little bit.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think that's kind of purposeful, because it is this hallucination that we are experiencing with these characters.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of things that's happening, not just in terms of events, but in terms of animation or things popping out of places. There's a lot of like nature and growing, like trees and plants kind of coming out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Different things like that. And so it's this interesting idea that it talks about how chemistry in the future could affect us and our dependence on it, and how drugs kind of tend to play a part of us dealing with the hard aspects of our lives.
And mainly just because it's the easy way out for some people. It's essentially our like kind of obsession with being consumed by the new trends that are happening in this world. And that's another way, if you want to take it from a general standpoint and kind of leave out the Hollywood aspect, I think that's the best way you can kind of put it, about just the new trends that are happening, be it drugs, as you mentioned, being obsession with beauty, with being young, with the losing of the past and innocence lost in the future, and just the demoralization of everything around you, and trying to hide from it. And that's essentially what this animated zone is really what is really meant to be, is trying to hide from the truth that is really painful for too many people. And you know,
that's the big part too. That's a big part of this movie.
Yeah, and at least like it seems like we're kind of in agreement there. So that means the movie obviously is doing a good job of trying to make some kind of coherent message that we seem to get. So I have to give the movie credit on that regard. One thing I want to backtrack a little bit to, and it's not really a criticism, but it's really a question. We talked about earlier in the beginning of this movie that Robin Wright is essentially playing herself in this movie. Why? And that it's a big question why. And the main reason why I say why, and why I kind of said that I feel like this was an alternate universe in the beginning, was because it's about Robin Wright as this washed up actress who was in her prime before and not so much anymore. I really kind of disagree with that statement. Maybe I felt like the movie was released at the wrong time, because I personally feel like Robin Wright is still at a pretty nice has had a real nice stretch of coherent work in the past few years. Nothing as big or as memorable as like The Princess Bride or Forrest Gump, and she's obviously not as gorgeous as she was then. But at the same time, I feel like she's still a solid actress. She's incredibly solid in House of Cards right now. So maybe my question is, why Robin Wright?
I think the big thing that they're hitting on, because I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I think it's just more of, when we're talking like mainstream Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
where has she been in that aspect of it? Because she pretty much hasn't been in the spotlight in the sense that you've talked about with those films for a while.
Right.
But I agree with you, and she even mentions it a few times in the film. She's like, I'm like not even 45. Like, I'm still young. I still look good.
Yeah.
But to Hollywood, a young, good-looking actress at the age of 45 is nothing to them. You might as well be an old woman at that point to these mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they're speaking on, especially when you're introducing themes of youth and what that means to Hollywood.
And it probably works that way too, because casting of Robin Wright might be a pretty smart move, because it actually makes the audience relate to her more, because she starts off this movie, she's ordinary. I wouldn't say ordinary, but she's a normal person. She's not too old, not too young. She's still a gorgeous woman despite her age right now. I mean, she's only in her mid-40s at this point right now, maybe close to 50. But she's still a beautiful actress. She's still a very good actress.
I agree.
When I was getting the satirical end of Hollywood in the first like third of this movie, I guess, I was kind of questioning why Robin Wright. I felt like if they were trying to drive that home, cast Lindsay Lohan in the main role or something.
Yeah. You know, and I did have the thought of what this film would be like if you had someone in there that maybe had a bigger resume than what she does, when we're speaking of mainstream Hollywood, like mm-hmm. what the difference would be, because I feel like it would be very different if that was the case. But
yeah,
despite that, they chose Robin Wright for a reason. I think it worked. I think she's still fantastic in the film, and she has some really poignant scenes. I think she plays really well.
That's what I was also going to veer into, is that I was questioning why she was in this movie, or why she was the one that was cast. Having said that, she is incredible in this movie.
Yeah.
There's a scene right before we get to the animated zone 20 years later where they're officially scanning her into this computer program where Hollywood's just going to use her. Maybe much of that great performance was really driven by Harvey Keitel's monologue.
I think it plays into each other really well.
Yeah. But her because basically she's told to act in this scanning sequence so they can capture all of her emotions, and you can tell that she's kind of phoning it in because she really can't do it. And then Harvey Keitel steps in and his character, he's essentially her agent, I guess. And then they've had a relationship, but they've known each other for years. There's a friendship there. So then he goes into this great story about how he got into the business of agency. And it's at both a hilarious story, a heartbreaking story, but the point is that he's trying to trigger these real emotions out of her. So then, and at the same time, while she's laughing and while she's crying and everything like that, the scanning process is going on. And I thought that scene itself was brilliant.
Me too.
And it kind of speaks to the essence of what a good acting performance is too, because the scene is really about acting. And I like that aspect of it too, in the way that it's almost like a good directing job from Harvey Keitel to get a great performance out, which I thought was a fascinating kind of tail end to this.
No, I completely agree. And you know, we were kind of talking about the Hollywood satire, and I'll use that in quotations on this film.
Loosely, yeah.
But I do think it is much more than that. That's kind of the basis level, because the film does speak on insecurity and fear and what we think about ourselves and how that affects the choices that we make. And that pretty much defines Robin Wright in the first 15 minutes of this movie,
right?
As that was something that drove everything for her, whether it was with her family or with her acting career. And, you know, even with the family, it goes even further into how having kids will affect those decisions and wanting to be around them, and how, you know, if your kids have defects, what that's like and how you go about that. And there's a lot of things that she's had to deal with. And then when you get to that moment that you're talking about, she can't do it. Like, she doesn't like to be forced into situations. She likes that idea of being able to choose. And so, since this isn't necessarily something she really wants, she couldn't do it. Mm. And it took Harvey Keitel to bring that out of her.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks to something about how we work with memories.
Sure.
When you can think about a memory, especially with someone that you love and you like to be around, it will provoke an emotion out of you.
It will.
And that's pretty much what happens is Harvey Keitel uses memories to kind of manipulate those emotions, but for her, it was still real. And I thought that was really intriguing.
And it kind of speaks again to what we talked about with our obsession with the past and the beauties and pain there too. And that's essentially what he's doing. He's telling a story about his own past. So in many ways, he's almost becoming a victim of not the satire, but what the movie's about too, because he's kind of experiencing something about it as he's telling her. It's almost like this was a bit of a reveal for him while it was just for her too. And there are some interesting connections here. You know, we've done a lot of reviews on this extra film segment for quite a while now, and a lot of times I'm noticing that my biggest criticism with a lot of these movies that we've been reviewing is that I feel like one half of the movie is stronger than the other, or one half of the movie is very different than the other. You know? Like, we talked a lot with movies like Frank and Magic in the Moonlight, a few of these other movies. I've criticized those movies a little bit more because of that. No, not less about Frank, more about Magic in the Moonlight. But in this case, this movie really does feel like two halves, but they kind of work together though.
They do.
This is one of those cases where I kind of give the movie credit for that, and it's. It's not an easy thing to do to really kind of balance those juxtapositions like that. And the director, who also did Waltz with Bashir, which was a really neat animated film, does it quite well here. Even the blending of the animated world and the real world, I guess, or the live action.
And I love the animation here. I thought it was really beautiful and really creative through a lot of it.
Kind of reminded me of, like, Hayao Miyazaki on drugs.
It is very much that. I was talking to a friend and I was like, I actually think you might like this. It kind of feels a little bit like Miyazaki a little bit, and this guy's a big Miyazaki fan. You could tell they probably got a little inspiration from that, but it was like he was tripping the whole time.
There's a scene in the very, very, like, one of the last shots of the movie. It's not a spoiler, but you see this what looks like an old style planar glider flying around, and actually took me directly to The Wind Rises. It looked exactly like it was a scene just cut from that movie. But yeah, the animation's quite beautiful and bizarre, and probably the best possible
even
way.
Haunting at times.
Yeah,
I mean, they are hallucinating the whole time. So
there is a bit of a downgrade there. Yeah, I'll agree.
All right. Well, any final thoughts, and what grade would you give The Congress?
I don't think I have any final thoughts. I think we kind of... I think it was a good discussion, man. That was a good one.
It was. I think it was very different than we anticipated.
I think we succeeded, because I was kind of worried about this one going in. One final thought: I do think the music in this movie is quite beautiful.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
I'll have to probably download the sound part of the soundtrack, at least the song that's played during the end credits and a few other parts of this movie. I'm not even sure who did the score for it. Max Richter did it. Okay. I know a few. He's known. I know he was. He composed the main theme that was used a lot in Shutter Island, which was quite a beautiful theme. But
this score is gorgeous. It's really good.
I agree. So for a final grade, though, can I say, like, not available?
Not available.
Undefined?
I guess so.
Initial thoughts. Initial thoughts. I give this a B+ right now with maybe... No, I take that back. I give this an A- now, only because the stuff that I really liked, I really did like, and I'm really excited to watch this movie again. I think this has a tendency to become not a sci-fi classic, but maybe a cult classic in the sci-fi genre.
Sure,
I think it's gonna attract an audience. The reviews for it are kind of mixed to positive right now, which I normally get excited for when a sci-fi film is released. That means it probably takes chances and it's not for everyone. But when you can dig deep and find something personal about it, which I think I might find with this movie on repeated viewings, this could end up being one of my favorite movies in time. At this point now, it's not fully digested, so it's an A- for lack of digestion.
I'm actually very similar to you in terms of grade, but before I get to that, I just want to say, you know, the film is called The Congress, and essentially the Congress is the people that are taking these drugs and hallucinations out in this desert somewhere that ends up becoming the animated world. And a lot of the people there are celebrating this chemical formula that gives them free choice to be whoever they want, kind of create their own imaginations and kind of live out their fantasies. And in the middle of the film, there's some detractors or some people that kind of rebel against that idea a little bit because they start to understand that sometimes that freedom can be a trap if you're not careful. And especially because these people are using these hallucinations for their fantasies, hiding from reality, trying to mask their pain and different hurts and different things like that, that ultimately when these people choose to become anyone that they want, that really they're nobody. Like, they're not themselves. They're just these figments that are happening in their imagination or right. just out there around just not really doing anything. And that idea and the exploration of that, to me, was extremely fascinating and also heartbreaking at the same time. Because some of these characters, they realize that, and they try to fight for more true freedom than just these hallucinatory, you know, figments of their imagination or whatever. Yeah. So,
in fact, a good example of that is Robin Wright's son,
exactly,
who actually can't physically live in the real world due to suffering from hearing loss and blindness. Eventually, there kind of becomes the question whether or not he's going to succumb to this hallucinatory world because it's easier for him.
Yes,
and he's a good example of that. We didn't touch much on him, who's played by Cody Smith McPhee, I think is the actor who plays him from Let Me In, From the Road. Very good young actor. Kind of reminds me a bit of Asa Butterfield, just the American version of him.
Sure,
but very good young actor, and he's. For the limited amount of screen time in this movie, he's quite good.
I completely agree. And those ending sequences with Robin Wright was very poignant. And
I agree.
Very much worked for me, especially with that score,
yeah.
as we talked about. That was really fantastic stuff. And I really like this movie a lot. I think overall, the only thing that really takes me out is some of the middle part. Once we first get into the animated world, the story does become a little bit disjointed for me and slows down to a point that it was hard for me to completely engage, but it wasn't long until I was back on board with what was happening. I just think some of those middle parts just kind of lose themselves a little bit, but that's pretty much my only criticism of the movie. I think it's really beautiful in a lot of different ways, and really this film is more about ideas than it is story or plot.
Right.
And it's about exploring those ideas and the emotion that can come with that. And that, to me, I thought was exciting, and I bought into most of it. So
yeah.
I really enjoyed
and,
it.
And I think that criticism you have is probably something that's going to fade away with repeated viewings. I think when you actually get
Possibly,
when you get more used to the actual the hallucinatory world and that it's actually, you know, kind of told from the point of view of everyone, and then they're kind of envisioning this world the way that they want to see it. It's
sure.
probably something you could easily let go of because it didn't bother me. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to change for you, but I am saying I think it's something that people will warm up to. Yeah,
but at the same time, I also think this is a really deeply layered film. There's a lot of elements
yeah.
and themes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, going back to some of the stuff we were talking about with the youth aspects, there's the drug aspects, there's the Hollywood aspects of the film. There's a lot that's going on that you can sit on and digest. And I've done that for 30 minutes going into this conversation. So I wrote down as many notes as I could and was like, hopefully we get a good conversation. But there's much more to what we've already talked about when you sit on the film a little bit longer.
Well, actually, this discussion's making me kind of realize more things about the film now, too. That means it's a good discussion.
It is.
Because we're
yeah.
learning as we discuss. We're learning as we're making a show.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But anyway, I will have a full review of this up on our site soon. So be sure and go and check that out at incessionfilm.com.
And if you agree or disagree with our takes, you can let us know by leaving a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/incessionfilm, or you can tweet us at incessionfilm. You can also leave us a comment on our Google Plus page or on Letterboxd. Our usernames are incessionfilm, and you can also email us at incessionfilm@gmail.com.
And that should do it for this week's show. Again, just to reiterate a little bit of what Brendan was just saying, find us on Facebook and Twitter. Just search Incession Film. Also, hit us up on YouTube at youtube.com/incessionfilm. Our full-length main shows are now up there, so you can go and check that out. And also hit us up on Letterboxd. where we've been a lot more active there as well. And again, just search Concession Film and you can find us there.
That's right. All on YouTube now. You got to love it.
Absolutely.
And also, you can check us out on iTunes to hear all those main podcasts. And also, these extra film reviews are up there as well on iTunes. You can leave us a comment or review there. We'd appreciate some feedback there as well as that on that medium. Also, sign up for our monthly newsletter, which you can do on our Facebook page by clicking on the newsletter tab or on our website at incessionfilm.com/newsletter.
And the Incession Film Podcast is supported by our super awesome listeners like you. If you want to help us out, there's several ways you can do that. If you just go to our website at incessionfilm.com, you can click on our bonus content tab in our main menu, and you can hear some awesome fun bonus content for just a small donation of 99 cents. And there are a lot of other ways you can donate, and you can see that information at incessionfilm.com/donate if you want to help us out. And we really, really appreciate those that do it. And you can hear everything we do on our mobile app. So whether it's our bonus content, our main shows, or these extra film podcasts, you can hear all of it under one roof for just a one-time fee of $1.99. And you can find that app on the Amazon market for Android devices, the Windows 8 phone store for Windows devices, and the Podcast Box app for iOS devices. And all those details are on the site on our revamped brand new page, incessionfilm.com/apps. So definitely go and check that out. This week on episode 81, we're going to be discussing The Zero Theorem from Terry Gilliam, which I look forward to getting into. And we're also going to talk about our top three Terry Gilliam movies, which should be an interesting conversation.
if you know Terry Gilliam, interesting to say the least.
To say the least. As
I
well.
Mean, wow.
Absolutely. So I look forward to that. That should be a fun show. As for episode 80, this last week, we did an In-Session Film throwback on Paul Thomas Anderson's The Master, and we talked about our top three 2014 fall films that we're looking forward to the most. So go and check that out. And speaking of bonus content, our latest bonus content is up where we discussed the 2014 summer box office, which was reportedly down 25%. But I think if you look at it a little bit closely, that might not be the case. Or there's some specific reasons, I'll say, as to why that is the case.
I think you have to listen to that podcast to realize that there needs to be a new profession out there in this world, and that's film statistics.
Film statistics.
And that would be something we're good at, because we tore them apart on
we
that
did.
One.
We
had some good insight on what the heck was really going on out there.
Yeah.
Please don't listen to that and say, oh, it was down 25%. That means this was a bad summer for movies.
Yeah, it's
bull crap.
It was a great summer for movies.
Yes. It was a badly marketed summer for movies. So that's the production company's fault. You failed. You failed on your job.
Yeah.
You did not sell your product.
Yeah, it was pretty poorly sold. I completely agree. Yeah, definitely go check out that bonus content. We had a really great discussion about that as well. And the last little plug is that Bubba Wheat, who has been on our show a few times, I think the last time he was here to talk with us about Snowpiercer, which was fun. So
that's true, yes.
So anyway, over at his website, Flights, Tights, and Movie Nights, he started this top 10 best superhero film of all time blog relay. And so he started it, and then he passed it off to a few other people who have then relayed it on. And we were like the 7th or 8th blog that ended up getting the relay. And
yeah.
So we ended up putting up our top 10 and adding our little input into that, which is also up on our site now at incessionfilm.com if you want to go and check that out. So, and ironically enough, we passed it off to Dan from Talking in Circles. So we're going to bring it all around. We're talking in circles. So you're welcome, Dan. Yeah. So on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. Go see The Zero Theorem. I think it's out on VOD right now, or it has been for a little while. So definitely go and check that out. And stay tuned with us this weekend on episode 81. And we'll see you guys next time on the In-Session Film Podcast Extra Film segment.